I didn't ditch my science at all. It was just a suit too tight fitting, and I had to expand my horizons, expand my worldviews, learn from other cultures.
That's biologist Elizabeth Saturist, who left her teaching jobs at MIT and the University of Massachusetts, and later her work on the science show Nova, to go live on a Greek island and rethink her life as a scientist. In the years since then, Saturis has developed a radical critique of Darwinism. I should say, Saturis has no truck with biblical creationists, but she believes the standard story of evolution has some major problems. Anne Strainchamps wanted to know more.
Your training is in evolutionary biology, but I know you've come to see the Darwinian account of evolution as not really telling the whole story of our origins. Why do you think the standard story of evolution falls short?
Well, really, this conflict that's going on now between evolution and creationism is a broader battle between science and religion. And that, of course, goes back to when the church in Europe originally was dissatisfied with science because it had a different creation story from the church. However, when the Industrial Revolution comes along, the industrialists can really use the scientists, and so you get a new alliance between science and industry. Now, because of this alliance, Darwin has a kind of different slant on things. In particular, Darwin says in The Origin of Species that his evolutionary theory is the doctrine of Malthus applied to all aspects of nature. Now, Thomas Malthus was the guy who decided the world was going to end soon because human populations always outstrip their food supplies. And he was the chief economist for the first great global multinational, which was the East India Company.
So are you saying that what Darwin came up with is basically an economic model of evolution?
Well, yes. Now, my problem with Darwin is not that it takes an economic view, but that the Malthusian struggle in scarcity story is the only one that Darwin picked up.
But what's wrong with that?
The problem with that is that nature turns out to be extremely intelligent from the get-go, and we now have people studying at the microbiological level and seeing how bacteria, for example, exchange information, make decisions across millions and even billions of individuals in communities so that they can reinvent themselves under stress by literally turning themselves into a different kind of bacterium in a time frame that can't be accounted for by chemical or electrical transmissions of information.
Well, so what do you think is driving this process? Because Darwin suggested that the engine driving all of this is simply accident and random mutation, and then the mutations that work, that are best for the species, are most competitive, are the ones that win out.
Probably the most important driver in evolution is stress. For example, when there's a great extinction on the planet, afterwards you see a flowering of new species that are all in the fossil record at once, as if the planet is, if it could talk about itself, was saying, boy, that didn't work. We couldn't get through that disaster. Let's try something different. The last great extinction killed off the dinosaurs and opened a path for the mammals, which had just begun to come in but weren't getting very far with all those dinosaurs stomping around and chewing them up. So now you get an era of mammalian flowering after that great extinction. And when I talked about the bacteria in the lab in Tel Aviv, they were stressed by putting them, say, on a substrate that they couldn't feed off, and they reinvented themselves. They literally chose from their own gene pool genes that had not been active, turned them into new metabolic cycles so that they could digest something they couldn't previously digest. Now, how did they do that? It happens very, very quickly because the colony dies off pretty immediately if there's no food. And yet it doesn't. It gets resourceful. It gets creative.
I want to talk a little bit more about the connection you make between biology and spirituality, because, you know, science and spirituality have been, we've regarded them as two entirely separate domains for a very long time. But when you write about the origin of the planet, the origin of the cosmos, you very often talk about the planet and the cosmos in terms of consciousness. Can you explain a bit about those ideas?
Yes. Well, when Willis Harmon asked me in the 90s to write a book with him, and we decided to call it Biology Revisioned, he asked me whether I was willing to take consciousness as the source of material evolution rather than as its late emergent product, as most scientists would say, consciousness arising from the brain, and the opposite perspective is the brain arises from consciousness. Now, that's a position that's taken by many of the Eastern philosophies or religions, depending on what you call them. For instance, the Vedic, in which consciousness gives rise to the material world. Now, Western science has a foundation made up of unprovable assumptions. And the unproven assumptions of Western science are this is a non-living universe with no purpose, no designer, no intelligence, in which life happens by accidental processes that get more and more complex. So I did make that 180-degree shift, as I call it. What I'm really looking for is an integral global science that would exchange those assumptions about a non-living, purposeless universe for the Vedic assumptions, this would bring East and West together, that the universe begins in a field of consciousness. And of course, the Copenhagen interpretation in physics says that things only happen in reality when our consciousness collapses wave functions. So science is very close to this.
I don't understand why this isn't simply creationism in different garb. I mean, because you're calling it consciousness, but isn't that the same as saying a creationist saying God created the universe?
There's a very big difference between Eastern and Western religions. The Eastern religions do not have a God in the sense of the Western ones, the desert religions, which is Islam, Judaism, and Christianity. They all have an external creator God who creates the world and then can let it go or manipulate it or whatever, depending on your belief system. In the Eastern, we usually call them philosophies, there is no such personality. There is no external God. God is equivalent to nature. Nature itself is sacred. Nature itself evolves from utter simplicity of oneness to complexity, and you revere it. You commune with it.
But aren't we just quibbling over what you think God is then? I mean, whether God is sort of separate from nature or whether God and nature are the same?
You know, as a scientist, it took me a very long time to be able to say the God word. But what we need is we need to bring East and West together in an integral global science, because this argument between science and religion I see as absolutely unnecessary. We could do the same kind of good technical science research on a foundation of, let's say, the universe is in the business of creating living systems, that it's conscious, that it becomes self-reflective through evolution, and it wouldn't spoil anything in science. What it would help with is questions like, how do you get intelligence out of non-intelligence, out of dumb mud bootstrapping itself? You wouldn't have to answer that question. You wouldn't have to answer where consciousness comes from. And there's no way that humans can ever answer that question. It has to remain a mystery of unity.
Elizabeth Satouris, talking with Anne Strangechamps. Satouris is the author of Earth Dance, Living Systems and Evolution.